Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jadakin.
Desi?
Yes?
Do you know it's Aries season?
Of course.
There are a few famous Aries I love.
A lot.
We've talked about Bette Davis before.
Of course.
Of course I share a birthday with Bette Davis.
Love it.
I didn't make a list of all my favorite famous Aries, but...
Joan Crawford is an Aries.
Is she really?
Yes.
I forgot.
Yes, and Shirley Temple.
Okay, so there's a lot of Aries queens out there.
Absolutely.
But today we're talking about one of my other favorite Aries queens, and that is Mariah Carey.
Ugh, love her.
I've been a lifelong fan of Mariah. She is... my diva. She is my queen. She has just filled my heart with so much joy basically my entire life.
I saw her first performance on Arsenio Hall's show, Vision of Love.
You saw that live?
Yes.
Like when it happened?
Yes.
That is a legendary performance.
And I remember being like, I love this song. I used to like sing it all the time. I was like, this is good.
It's an iconic ballad.
Well, I feel like there wasn't music like that happening when that ballad dropped because it was old school. It had like old school vibes to me.
Yeah.
But like modern, you know, a modern twist to
no,
it.
No, I know what you mean.
Just like that kind of bluesy kind of like, I don't know. It just had that certain vibe to me. And I was like obsessed. And I was like, she's so beautiful.
It's still so good. Like that song still sounds good today.
Remember Arsenio Hall show? Did you ever see that show? I don't even remember when it was on. I mean, I guess
yeah,
like the 90s.
I did. I was very young when it was on. But I do remember like, you know, being a little kid and like woof, woof, woof.
That was like such a show where you watched it because that was where all the new people would come on.
Yes.
Like it was sort of a water cooler show.
And like
for
the
sure.
Cool new artists.
Yes. So I liked that show because it was really funny. Oh yeah, I guess the Bill Clinton, that was like a big thing.
That was like a huge
deal. So he was like, yeah. So he definitely lost his cool factor, but I do remember Mariah on that show because
yeah.
I watched it. That
yeah.
was like the only late night show I think I watched.
Well, this is going to be a multi-part episode because there is a lot to get to. And for this episode, my main source is Mariah Carey's memoir called The Meaning of Mariah Carey. And it is juicy.
Yeah.
And we're just talking about her early life this week.
And you know she's going to give us the tea.
She spilled some tea just about stuff in her early life.
I mean, she's funny.
She's very funny, and one thing I love about her is, like, she's not afraid to admit that she's, like, kind of petty about certain things.
I mean, she has to admit it, because she wears it really well on her face.
Well, like, for example, she was telling this story about how this, like, popular jock guy at her high school was telling her, like, you're going to be working at Howard Johnson's in 5 years. And she's like, well, little did he know that less than 3 years later, I'd be singing at the NBA Finals. And I know he was watching that.
That's got to feel great.
We love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get started. Mariah Carey was born March 27th, 1969, to Patricia and Alfred Roy Carey. She was born in Huntington, New York, which is on Long Island.
I know. She's a Long Island girl. That's why that performance was so big when she was on Arsenio, because everyone in Long Island was like, yeah.
Long Island girl makes good.
Yes.
Her mother, Patricia, was a white woman from an Irish Catholic family, and her father, Alfred, was African-American and Afro-Venezuelan. Patricia was born and raised in Springfield, Illinois, and lived with her widowed mother and her two siblings. She fell in love with music and singing, specifically opera, and was awarded a scholarship to Juilliard. She would go on to sing with the New York City Opera. According to Mariah, she lived an exciting bohemian life in New York City, amongst other artists. She was active in the civil rights movement, which really went against this racist home life that she grew up in.
Yeah.
Her mom was very racist.
Mariah's grandmother.
Mariah's maternal grandmother was. Then Patricia met Alfred, a black man, and Patricia's mother was outraged. And when Patricia married Alfred, her mother disowned her.
Good. Bye.
Yeah. She disowned her own daughter. And yeah, Patricia was like, well, too bad I'm marrying this guy.
Yeah.
For the first few years of Mariah's life, she lived with both parents, her older brother, Morgan, and her older sister, Allison, in a house in the Long Island town of Melville. From an early age, Mariah was witness to her older brother's violent outbursts, sometimes culminating in violent brawls with their father. On one occasion, the two of them would have to be pried apart by the police. In her memoir, she says, quote, "By the time I was a toddler, I had developed instincts to sense when violence was coming, as though I was smelling rain, and I could tell when adult screaming had reached a certain pitch and velocity that meant I had to take cover."
Yes.
After her parents divorced, Mariah and her older brother lived with their mother, moving several times to various homes around Long Island. Her older sister lived with their father. Now, the court had ordered that Mariah's brother and father had to be separated because
the violence.
Because of all the violence. Mariah would spend Sundays with her dad. The thing she looked forward to the most on Sundays was her father's cooking, specifically his linguine with clams.
Wow.
Now, Mariah is just like us. She loves food.
Yeah.
She talks about food a lot.
In the book?
Yeah.
Good. I've seen her cook before on her videos.
Oh, yeah.
She likes to cook.
She likes to eat.
Look, she's a classic Long Island girl.
For sure.
I mean.
And she loves linguine with clams. And her dad apparently would like spend all day making it. It would be super delicious. And so she recalls one Sunday waiting for her special weekly dinner to be ready, only to have her grandmother whip out a can of Kraft Parmesan and dump it all over Mariah's linguine.
Oh, my God.
Which, in Mariah's opinion, ruined the dish.
Yeah.
And I agree with her.
Wow.
She's like, this is not, you do not put Kraft Parmesan cheese.
I'm upset.
She was so upset she got it from the table and started crying.
She's like, this is worse than the violence.
She was like seven. She's like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Been there.
Yeah. I like honestly felt her in that moment. So Mariah's father, he was very disciplined. He was in the military. And his father and stepmom lived in Queens. And little Mariah loved traveling there from Long Island to hang out with her cousins and her aunties and her grandparents. Mariah had been cut off from her mother's side of the family after they had disowned her, so she really cherished this time spent with her dad's side of the family. She said, "Being there was the closest feeling I had to having a big family, a normal family, a real family." While Patricia fostered Mariah's creativity, Alfred was really concerned with his children's academics, and he wanted them to get a good job and get good grades and have all of that and have like a very stable, secure kind of future. Mariah says her father was deeply concerned with how the world perceived him and of the example that he was setting as a black man and specifically as a black father. He wanted his kids to excel personally and professionally. And she could see the pain that he felt when her two older siblings really struggled as teenagers. Her brother Morgan would end up being institutionalized for a time, and her sister Allison got pregnant just before she turned 18.
Do we know, does the brother have some kind of mental illness, or he just has issues?
He has some kind of mental illness and issues, as does the sister. And
we'll weren't being dealt with at this time.
Yeah.
Got it.
So for, there was a period where Morgan was in an institution.
Okay. Probably to protect himself and others.
Yes.
Okay.
So Mariah felt fundamentally different from her father, but she did love Sundays with him, going for long drives in his vintage Porsche Speedster, those Italian dinners, of course, and of how he made her laugh. And although Mariah and Patricia both shared a love of music, life at her mother's was often really tough because when her teenage brother was still living there, he was still prone to those violent outbursts.
Damn.
And now he was attacking the mother. And it was really scary. One night when she was 6 years old, she thought her brother had killed their mom.
Oh, my God.
Because the mom was lying on the floor unconscious. And
oh
so
my God.
Little Mariah knew the phone number to her mom's friend. So she called her and was like, you need to come over. My mom's dead.
Oh, my God.
So the friend called the police. And fortunately, Patricia came too when they arrived and she was okay. Now, despite the pain and fear that existed in this house, Mariah speaks fondly of her mother's friends, specifically of Bert and Myron. They were the gay couple that she referred to as her uncles.
Of course.
And she loved them. She was obsessed with them. She's like, they wore caftans. They had a fabulous house.
Yeah.
They were always cooking something good.
I remember being a kid and being like, I love that type of guy. Like, I didn't know what it was. Like, I really like that type.
You know, Paul Lind?
Yeah. It was like that. They're
whatever
so funny.
That genre of guy is.
Yeah.
So she loved this couple. She referred to them as her uncles. And she really loved going to their house as a child, especially at Christmas time when everything was like fabulously decorated.
Right.
It was a respite from the turmoil that she experienced at home. Bert and Myron always sat at attention when Mariah would put on her little performances for them and encouraged her flamboyance and creativity. Mariah said they, quote, supported the showgirl in me.
Perfect.
Little Mariah never really felt like she fit in. She once drew a cartoon of her family that had a caption that said, they're weird, but they're okay. Weird was exactly how she described feeling. She felt weird because her dad went to a Unitarian church. She felt weird because her mother lived in a commercial district with no other houses around in Northport. She felt weird because that apartment was sitting above a deli. And she thought her siblings were weird, too. Allison, she said, her sister one time brought all of her friends over to the house, and she made Mariah sing White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane.
Oh my God.
Surrounded by candles and like turn out the lights. And she's like, it was really spooky, but like I did it because it was my older sister.
Right.
And of course, young Mariah felt othered because she was biracial. She says, quote, having one black and one white parent is complicated. But when you're a little girl with a white mother, largely cut off from other black women, it could be excruciatingly lonely. Mariah cites her frequently unkempt hair as an example of the care that she says she missed out on as a child. And of course, she experienced racism at a really early age. She recalls in preschool the white kids in her class laughing and taunting her because one time she used a different color crayon when she was drawing a picture of her father. Like she was drawing a picture of her whole family and she picked a different crayon for her dad and they're like, you used the wrong crayon. She said that the kids in school had only ever seen her with her white mother, and because she had lighter skin and, like, kind of blonde hair, they didn't know that she was black. She was humiliated and felt demoralized at just 4 years old. When she was in first grade, she saw her white friend burst into tears when her father came out onto the stoop to greet them for a play date. Mariah said, quote, that day on the stoop, I learned, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that I was not like the people I went to school with or lived in my neighborhood. And sadly, the racism Mariah faced did not end there. She would suffer really bad racist abuse from her white classmates and supposed friends into her teenage years.
I mean, Long Island is pretty bad.
I've heard.
It's not great. Especially certain areas.
Yeah, I've heard. She told this one story that was just like so awful about like this group of white girls who she thought was her friends.
Right.
And when they found out that she was black, they started calling her all kinds of slurs.
Oh my God.
And it was just like awful. Like it was a really awful story.
Right. And that's like learned behavior.
Oh yeah.
Like they,
the parents were racist.
Yeah. The
too.
Parents were racist.
So one of Mariah's closest confidants when she was young was her big orange cat.
Yes.
Morris.
Oh my God.
Cause of course his name was Morris.
Look, that's what people did back then. You just named it after a famous cat. You had an orange cat.
It was Morris.
Maybe Garfield later on.
So she had had this cat since he was a kitten.
Aww.
It was a gift from her mother's boyfriend, Henry. And when she had a tough day at school, she'd sit on her wooden swing with Morris in her lap and tell him about her problems.
Aww.
Later, Mariah would pay homage to this in her Vision of Love music video, where she can be seen in the video snuggling a cat, like throughout the video,
aww,
specifically sitting on a wooden swing holding this cat.
Aww.
That was a direct homage to that.
Yes.
Mariah lived with her mother and her boyfriend Henry in a very small house on the property of the estate where Henry worked as the gardener. Henry was one of her mother's good boyfriends. Mariah had a lot of opinions about some of the men that she dated. There were a lot of...
Oh, I've been there.
Look.
They think you don't know, but you're rating the boyfriends from a very young age.
I thought of you.
Yeah.
I thought of you in this moment.
It's also one of those things where you're like, really? Come on.
This guy.
Because you're like, this one is going to fuck my life up, this loser.
Well, this guy.
I'm not saying Henry.
No, Mariah really liked Henry. He was a horticulturist.
Right.
He was a magician with plants.
Yes.
And he was really nice and he supported her singing and her passions and like being creative and stuff. And he was just cool. So she has really good memories of him. But sadly, he was also a Vietnam vet and he suffered from PTSD.
Oh, no.
So when his mental health took a turn for the worse, Mariah's mom says to Mariah, we have to leave right now. We have to get out of here right now. Mariah's like, wait, what? And she goes into the kitchen, and this is what she said. Quote, Henry was sitting in a chair in the middle of the kitchen. The lights were off, and I could see the strong silhouette of his afro. He was holding a long double-barreled shotgun in one of his hands. Staring down at the white linoleum floor, he said very calmly, you're not leaving me. I'm not going to let you guys leave. He then said, I'm going to chop you up and put you in the refrigerator and make you guys stay here. So Mariah was like, okay, mom, yeah, like we got to go. So Mariah and her mom run to the car and they're about to leave when Mariah realizes that Morris the cat, she has to get Morris the cat.
Oh my God, this is stressful.
Dude, I was like sweating reading this.
I am down with what she did. Like, I'd be the same way.
She's like, wait. And so she runs out of the car, runs back through the house at risk of possibly her life.
I mean, who knows?
She's got to get Morris though. So she grabbed him, ran back to the car and was like, drive.
Now I'm like, even though I was already, I'm like a lifelong fan and defender to the death now.
Yeah.
Because this is quality character.
This is peak cat lady.
Yeah. That is just like, that's someone you want on your side.
Yeah.
For sure.
I support and understand this.
Oh my God.
I would do the same thing.
And if she did anything else, I would have to knock a little respect off.
Right.
Thank God she didn't.
Music and singing kept young Mariah going. It was her passion. It was her escape. And her vocal talents were apparent. And when she was in fifth grade, she went to an exclusive summer camp for performing arts. At camp, she played the role of Hodel in their production of Fiddler on the Roof.
Ooh.
And she explored her craft of performance, but also her interest in songwriting through her work in Fiddler. Like, she really was kind of picking apart the songs, like musically and lyrically, and that sort of got her brain going about composure and writing and yes. songwriting in general. Mariah remembers seeing her father in the audience with the biggest smile she'd ever seen. He gave her a bouquet of daisies after the performance. During her time at camp, though, Mariah had believed that she passed as a Jewish girl. But after the play, she said that now everyone knew her father was black. And because of that, she believed she never got a big role in the camp again. So by the time she was 12, Mariah was actually seeing her father less and less. It was just her mom and her living in a home that she referred to as the shack.
Oh, no.
It was small, run down, and had previously been an abandoned building that kids would hang out and party in. So it probably had some weird smells in there.
What does the mom do for a job?
She's a vocal coach.
I see.
So when she saw Mommy Dearest for the first time, Mariah was like, I'm going to live in that house one day.
Oh, my God.
Like, that's how I'm going to live?
Yeah.
Just like Joan Crawford.
Totally.
In a palatial mansion in Beverly Hills.
Oh, my God.
So she just kept picturing that. She kept her eye on the prize.
Yeah.
Around this time, Mariah's older sister, Allison, returned to Long Island from the Philippines, where she had been living with the father of her child for the last several years. The father of her child was in the military.
I see.
So after she got pregnant, she just went with him to the Philippines.
Right.
He was like a little older. But now Allison was 20, and she was not in a good place. She sometimes stayed with Mariah and her mother and was bringing around this weird older guy.
What is the age difference between the siblings? Like, is Mariah much younger than Allison?
She's like 8 years younger.
Oh, so it's pretty big.
She's like 8 to 10 years younger.
Oh, my God.
So Mariah's like 20, in her early 20s at this time. And Mariah's 12.
Allison's in her early 20s.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay.
Allison's in her early 20s and Mariah's 12.
Got it. I just wanted to get the age difference.
Yeah, she's much younger than her two older siblings
Okay, got
are.
It. But they're all the same mother, father.
Yes.
Okay.
So, like I said, Mariah's noticing that Allison's like hanging out with this weird older guy. And Mariah's like, he looked about 60.
Oh, no.
Like just some creepy guy.
I mean, yeah.
One night, after Allison had gotten into a horrible fight with their mom, she grabbed 12-year-old Mariah and just took her. Mm. And she took her over to this old guy's house.
Oh, my God.
She then handed Mariah a pill and was like, take this.
What?
And Mariah just did, because it was her older sister.
Oh, my God.
And the next thing she knew, she was unconscious. Mariah said she didn't know why her mom just allowed her sister to take her out that night. Nor does she remember exactly what happened to her after she took the pill. Another time, Mariah remembers her sister offering her some coke, holding her fingertip up to her nose and telling her to sniff. 12-year-old Mariah declined to sniff. She's like, I don't think so.
Oh my God.
Allison would take Mariah to the house that she lived at with her boyfriend, John. Now, this is a different guy.
Okay, not the 60-year-old.
The 60-year-old guy, I don't know where that guy went.
This is upsetting.
But now she's taken her to this other guy's house who's definitely in his 20s.
Okay.
These two adults should not be, like, hanging around.
Well, partying.
Partying.
With a 12-year-old.
With 12-year-old Mariah. Allison's living with her boyfriend, John, and two other girls, one of whom was a teenage runaway.
Okay.
So this is like
This is a bad situation. We all know it.
No. But Mariah, being 12 years old, was like, oh my God, they got snacks.
No, this is like triggering. Because it's like, I remember those situations when you're young and you're like, this is cool. And you're like, wait a minute. There's nothing cool about adults who have ho-hos. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You think it's cool, but you're like, looking back, you're like, that was an adult. Like,
no, you look back on stuff. I think about it all the time.
There's me too.
Instances from when I was like 13, and I was like, that 26-year-old had no business being in this situation.
And I thought they were cool. Like, right. It's frightening.
No, it is sick. Mariah had no idea at the time that this house was being used as a brothel,
oh,
and that
God.
They were all dealing drugs. Now, We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mariah's older sister, Allison, told her, look, you can't tell mom that I'm taking you to my house and that this is what we're doing when we're hanging out.
What does the mom think is happening?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know exactly.
So she just might be like, they're hanging out.
Right. They're bonding because she's been away.
Or maybe she's just happy to have some free time.
Yeah. Like some childcare.
Yeah.
So Mariah was like, that's fine. Because she was like having fun for a bit.
It Absolutely.
They were driving around with the boyfriend, smoking cigarettes. Like they were giving little Mariah cigarettes in the back seat.
Oh my God.
They were taking her to the arcade and she's like, I get to play Pac-Man all day.
Oh my God. Deeply upsetting.
I mean, like we said, it's like a classic. Like you think you're like, this is cool.
It's so fun. We're out late.
But soon Mariah would become inundated with late night calls from Allison, where she was clearly suffering some kind of drug-induced psychosis. And Allison was just calling Mariah. Like, she gave her her own line. So she's like, let me call you in secret.
Oh, my God.
Like, she gave her her own phone.
Yeah.
So she could basically call her 12-year-old sister.
Oh, my God.
And just, like, say wild things.
That's bizarre.
When she was having a meltdown. There were also times where she would threaten suicide and little Mariah would have to like talk her out of it.
Oh my God.
Which is like really abusive.
Yeah.
Then one day, Mariah's sister called her and was like, hey, John's going to pick you up.
Oh,
that's
no.
her boyfriend. And so John picked Mariah up and she assumed that the three of them were just going to go off and have fun together like they always did. But when she got in the car, she noticed that John was carrying a gun.
Oh, my God.
And they weren't going to the arcade. Instead, John took Mariah to a card game where she had to sit in a corner of this gross room on the floor and wait around as all these gross older men smoking were just leering at her the whole time.
Why did he bring her? I'm sorry. Like
I think it was some errand. Like, he had to stop at this card game, and he
probably
played cards for a bit.
Got it. So it was supposed to just pick up something, maybe?
Yeah, or drop something off. And she's sitting in the corner on this. I can't imagine how gross that floor probably was.
Oh, my God.
And hearing, like, what she described were just, like, the grossest things.
Hey, come over here, cutie.
Yeah.
just like
a nasty old man.
Ugh.
Just making comments. So when it was finally time to leave, John then took her to a drive-in movie, where he then put his arm around her and forced her to kiss him. Mariah was saved from further harm when another man drove up beside them and noticed what was going on.
Oh, my God.
He was like, that's a child.
Wait, so she's 12 and he's in his 20s?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And so John sees that this guy who pulls up alongside him clocks.
What's going on?
What's happening here? And so John backed out of the drive-in and just drove Mariah home. But obviously, this is like a very traumatic experience.
Yeah.
After that night, Mariah stopped taking her sister's calls. She was like really scared from this experience.
Yeah.
Sadly for Mariah, she didn't feel like there was anyone that she could tell about what had happened to her. So she just kept it all a secret. Then one day, Allison came over to her mother's, and the two of them sat down and had some tea. And Mariah hoped that this would be, like, a positive experience, like a new beginning, kind of, with her sister, and that they could, like, have a sisterly bond again. Then their father called the house, and neither of them wanted to talk to him. Their mother handed the phone to Mariah. While she talked to him, Allison was motioning for Mariah not to let the dad know that she was there. But Mariah thought that they were like kind of joking around and playing a game.
Oh my God.
So Mariah was like, hey, dad, Allison's here. You want to talk to her? So Allison became furious. Like a light switch went off.
Oh, no.
And like the mood totally changed. And she proceeded to throw her scalding cup of tea onto Mariah.
What?
So Mariah says she passed out from the pain. And the next thing she knew, she was in the hospital and they were cutting off her top with surgical scissors because the fabric of her shirt had fused to her skin.
Oh, my God.
She had third degree burns all over her back.
Holy shit.
For Mariah, that marked the end of their relationship. All that trust she had in Allison was completely eroded now.
I mean, I think that's probably good. She didn't trust her anymore.
Yeah.
Because like, she's not trustworthy.
No. And she's like, this. The burns, they hurt like hell. Like, it took me years for someone to be able to pat me on the back.
Oh, my God.
Without wincing.
Jesus Christ. Like, that must have been some kind of crazy cheap fabric, too, that it kind of melted almost.
Oh, yeah. It was like 1982.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Oh, my God. So that's horrifying.
And just it was a betrayal. It was not only was it excruciatingly painful, but to have your own family member hurt you like that.
A child. Yeah.
Right. At the time, Mariah's mother was working as a vocal coach, making a small amount of money, but their house was filled with music. Patricia taught her daughter songs and scales on the piano, which is where a young Mariah would begin to compose her own little songs. She remembers the musicians who came over to the house for jam sessions and how she loved sitting in on them, learning about music from the people who loved it just like she did. Quote, "I was surrounded by the love of music, but even more importantly, by the love of musicianship, the love of the craft, the love of the process." Mariah says she felt more comfortable at the supper clubs with her mom and all those jazz musicians than she ever did at school with the kids. Her mother encouraged her growing passion, entering her in a talent competition where she sang Out Here on My Own.
Yes.
From Fame.
Of course. Classic.
So she won this competition.
I bet.
I mean, that is like a perfect, a perfect little Mariah song.
Absolutely.
Mariah's relationship with her mother is and was a complex one. While Mariah is grateful for the art and culture her mother exposed her to and how she always encouraged her to follow her dreams, she says, quote, "My mother also created persistent turmoil. Mariah wondered if at times their lifestyle was too bohemian or if her mom didn't do enough to protect her from her brother. By the time she was a teenager, their relationship became more fraught. She recalls her mother snapping at her when Mariah one time giggled at the way she sang Somebody's Watching Me by Rockwell. So there, look, to Mariah's credit, this would be very funny to witness.
Especially if it was operatic.
She was singing Somebody's Watching Me in opera style, dead serious.
Oh my God.
As they're driving in the car and like 14-year-old Mariah is like laughing.
See, I want to see this performance too.
Because it's so stupid.
Oh, my God. But this is the classic mom, too, who's like, I did the best I could. Like, and you're like, my life was trauma after trauma, lady. I don't doubt you did the best you could, but it wasn't good enough. Ma'am.
Excuse me.
It wasn't even close to being good enough.
So Mariah's in the car with her mom. She's singing, I always feel like somebody's watching me, like an opera singer. Mariah's laughing. And that's when her mom just fucking loses it. She's pissed. And she says to Mariah, "You should only hope that one day you become half the singer I am." It was a statement that cut young Mariah deep and one she would carry with her for a long time. It's just one of those statements.
Absolutely.
From your childhood that may seem innocuous, but for some reason,
stays with you.
It just stays with you.
Yeah.
She says in that moment, the relationship shifted between her and her mom, and she suddenly felt like, oh, am I competition? Mariah got her first job as a demo singer in the seventh grade. It wasn't,
oh my God,
it wasn't glamorous.
Right.
It was like some little home studio in Long Island, and she loved it though. She's like, I'm in a studio.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
Fucking cool. She called the studio her natural habitat. And by high school, Mariah was doing vocals for local commercial jingles.
Ooh.
That is the dream job.
I would love to know what.
I give anything to know which jingles and to hear them.
I know. I wouldn't doubt that I've heard some of them.
This is an ideal job for me. Like, I feel like I could sing the shit out of a jingle.
Da, 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 dee, da, da.
Like, I mean, I did that for free around my house as a child.
Oh, my God. I think most kids who are like us grew up imitating commercials and jingles. That was like, or recording them off the TV and like
singing them.
Like, I have it on tape now. Like,
you can ask my mother about mattress discounters. That was my favorite one to sing.
Oh, yeah. Just knowing them, like, exactly every inflection.
Have
like,
a good night's sleep on us. Mattress discounters.
Oh, I know that one.
Was that national?
I know that jingle.
That was a banger.
Yeah, that is a good one. Is that still a job?
Can I get that job? I think it's only like hyper local now, probably.
Right. We got to marry like a mattress store guy.
It's only mattress stores or like some local insurance company.
Yeah. Like, what is that? What is that? Cerritos Auto Square?
Yes. Yeah,
it's like that, the car dealership.
Keys on Van Nuys.
Yeah, car dealerships, they're still doing jingles.
They're carrying the torch.
And some like dental places, like local medical offices.
What about, you know what one I love is, well, you won't get a lemon. I wouldn't have got a lemon at Toyota of Orange.
Yeah, you want to have like a little... line of dialogue in the middle. that's the ultimate.
Yeah.
We have a little like aside during your singing.
What?
Because you can show off your acting ability as well.
And that one's been going on for decades, I feel like.
No, auto centers and car dealerships, they got a stronghold on that industry, especially in Southern California.
Yeah,
like most of the jingles I hear are that.
They're
for
cars.
Car dealerships.
They're for cars.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's like a termite one too.
Wait, is it local?
Yeah, I can't remember how it goes though. It's like all these things. I actually know them all, but right now when I'm trying to think of them, like nothing's coming to my brain.
Well, there's J.G. Wentworth.
Oh, yeah. No, this one there's like a... because now I can only think keys. That's like in my head now and I can't get anything out. That's like a popular though to do kind of like a little bit of a Beach Boys inspired.
Yes. If it's a Southern, we have a lot of Beach Boys inspired ones.
Keys
on Van Nuys.
Ta-da, keys.
Well, we'll come up with them later.
Yeah.
Maybe we can make an album of just us.
I also like the ones that are like, AutoZone. Yeah. You're like that voice from like a Street Fighter. Or something.
Get in the zone, AutoZone. Yeah, the
O'Reilly
truck
is like a classic too,
dude. With the lady at the end of
ow,
it's like oh O'Reilly's Auto Parts. Ow,
yeah.
Who is that?
Who's doing that? Imagine introducing yourself. You're like, I sang that jingle.
I would faint.
Like, that's like a star to me. That's a star.
If I met the person who sang the O'Reilly's Auto Parts, I'd fucking lose my
mind.
That's
the only time in my life I'd say to someone, sing it for me right now. I need to hear it right now. Like, I'd have to. Absolutely.
I love that.
That's so cool. I bet you I know some of these jingles because I was on Long Island.
You had to have heard one of these, Desi.
And I was obsessed with local commercials.
There's no way that you weren't driving around as a little kid in the car with your mom and you heard a young Mariah singing a jingle on the radio.
I betcha. I feel very aligned with her right now, like knowing I might have heard her jingles.
You guys were in proximity of each other.
I know.
Wild moms.
Seriously, I didn't realize how much in common I had with her.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. Now we have to be best friends.
So she's like making, you know, a tiny bit of her own money. It's like not a lot of money. It's just like a little bit of extra.
But having a job like that, that's crazy. I would have been living.
Oh my God.
If I was like a demo singer. at 14. It's so Can you imagine?
No, it's so
Just talking on a microphone was enough for me.
Oh my God. No, I did a local radio commercial when I was 10 or 11 with my dad and my brother like the Marin County Fair. And I got pulled out of school to do it.
Oh my God.
And when I came back from school, everyone was like, "You were on the radio." And I was so embarrassed about it.
It's funny how they can turn even a great achievement into like a misery.
I was like excited going in there because we went into like a recording booth. And I, of course, love talking on a microphone.
No, that's why I used to do those recording booths at the theme parks. Every time I was like, that's what I would spend my money on to go do a track.
Look at us now.
I know.
Look at us. Look at it. Came true.
We got our microphone.
We finally got mic and you got to listen to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so she's doing these like small little gigs. And not only did she realize she had a passion for singing, she also had a passion for writing and composing. She had been writing poems and like little song lyrics and creating melodies on her piano at home since she was little. And she continued recording demos of other people's songs for a little bit of money into high school. While she was working with these two guys, Mariah described as, quote, sketchy, she asked them if she could record some of her material.
Ooh.
She's like, "I've been singing your demos and they kind of suck."
Yeah.
She didn't say that, but she in the book, she's like, "They were corny as hell."
Right.
"I wanted to bring some of my stuff because like these guys weren't cool, but yeah. I was like a teenager."
So she knew.
She knew it was like on the radio and they said no. And she's like, "What the fuck?" She's like, "You guys don't even know it's cool."
Yeah. "You guys don't listen to Lisa Lisa
and the Cult Jam."
You don't think like who would have been popular?
Debbie Deb.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking a bunch of like freestyle acts.
Or just that era of music that was very New York too. Like,
yeah. So eventually she made a deal with a local studio owner that stipulated that she get to record some of her own material, not just theirs. So she's like, "I'll record your stuff, but I also want to come in here and be able to like record my stuff."
Why not?
And so they let her, and that's when she began recording her own little demos, including the song Alone in Love, which would wind up a different version of it, but it would make its way onto her first album. Eventually, Mariah's brother Morgan introduced her to some session musicians in the city where he was living, and so she began to work for these guys in Manhattan. Mind you, she's still in high school, so now she's spending these late hours in the city driving back to Long Island just to get a few hours of sleep before going to school in the morning.
Now, that's one of the benefits of having a shitty mom.
Right,
because you have a lot of freedom in some way.
She could do her demo tracks.
No, I mean, I also would go into the city, like just fucking go into Manhattan.
Yeah, you were a fucking limelight.
Yeah, I'm just like taking the bus, the train, like into the city.
Her brother also got Mariah connected with this producer, Gavin Christopher, who was pretty successful. He worked with Grandmaster Flash and Rufus.
Oh, wow.
Of Rufus and Chaka Khan.
Yeah.
So together, they recorded her first real demo. At this point, Mariah was itching to get out of her mom's house and start her adult life and career, especially since the new guy her mom was dating was a real loser.
Oh no.
And he was petty too. She said that this guy, he like took them out to Thanksgiving dinner at a restaurant, and then at the end of the meal he asked Mariah and the mom to help split the bill, and she's like, "That was just so fucking
a kid." I'm sorry.
Yeah. She's like, "It was so tacky."
He's like, "Give me that demo money."
No, he was dumb. She like knew from jump that this guy was a loser. She said of her mom marrying this guy, quote, "I guess she thought she had struck it rich marrying this guy because he had a boat in the West 79th Street boat basin, but that was where he lived."
Oh my God, dude.
And trust me, that boat was more of a tugboat than a yacht.
Oh,
but you know, this guy was like, "My boat."
Oh, sick.
So a few years later, when her mother would divorce this guy and Mariah had like made her first record, she's like, "I'll pay for the divorce lawyer."
Yeah.
And she did. So Mariah did move out of her mom's house at this time. At the age of 17, she graduated high school and she moved into the city and she loved it.
Yeah.
She was like, it was glamorous, but gritty.
Yeah.
And she was like all about New York City.
Mm.
And now she's like getting ready. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
She's going to make it happen.
She's going to make it happen.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're going to leave off there. And next week, we're going to discuss her breakout, the Tommy Mottola years, and more.
Yay. I'm excited.
Yeah.
I love her.
I love her so much.
Ugh, I wish I seriously, we got to be friends with her somehow. How?
Look, Desi, you're preaching to the choir. I've wanted to meet this woman since I was very small.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like sincerely one of my favorite artists like of all time.
She seems so fun though, just as a person.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Let's get linguine and clams with her.
I know. I want to eat with her.
It would be fun.
She was talking about when she first moved to New York, how she would like really, she had no money and she would really struggle with like buying a Subway token or getting a bagel at her favorite bagel place. And she's like, the bagels are just like so good. Like, sometimes I just had to walk.
That's like, I love that that's a story.
No,
you gotta get that bagel.
She had to get that bagel and she's like, I need to get a job so I can afford that bagel.
And bagels are cheap too, like as far as a meal goes.
Yeah.
Especially back then. Oh my God.
Anyway,
I'm hungry.
We'll be back in a few days for the mini episode and we'll see you then.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.